Okay, gentle. Thank you very much for your presentation. First of all, I would like to acknowledge Josep and the team, this invitation to stay here. I met them when they were starting, and I couldn't imagine that they would have such a brilliant trajectory, being now a group of reference in our community. Also, I would like to acknowledge to Fabrice and Michael their initiative 20 years ago. I'm going to talk about something that seems to be a bit old-fashioned, which is scale effect. But now there is a new insight with the use of ultra-thin plies, as I will try to show you. First of all, I would like to say something about Mima, myself, and the group, because the presentation apparently gives us the role of people devoted to science of materials, in this case, science of composite material. It is true, but we are a group that perform calculation, testing of large components, as is indicated here, where you see the full-scale test of the tail cone, which implies to develop everything you see in this picture. The question is that to arrive to the best possible design of a component, in our opinion, in my opinion at least, you have to understand as deep as possible the mechanisms of damage that a material, in our case, a composite, may suffer. The origin of this is the 80s and 90s, where several evolutions of the deformations were shown by different researchers. Probably the most known is that of Parvici et al., showing how the deformation to produce a crack in the 90-degree ply increases when the thickness of the 90-degree decreases. And the other is similar. Parvici is on glass, and Flax and Kural was on carbon. The question is that when I wrote this paper, and even when I read this paper, and now when I read them now, my understanding is that all points correspond to a similar damage in the 90 degrees, a transverse crack. We will see that the problem in itself is much more complicated. With this transparency, I want to refer what has been my 20 years of research. During my stay in NASA Langley, performing a study on failure criteria of fibrous composite material, I finished it convinced that we need to arrive to the level where the damage appears. You can do it without, you can predict something without this knowledge, but at the end you are restricted to the problem you are considering. So I would like to make a reflection about the concept of damage and fracture. We understand, I understand, like damage, alteration of the internal structure of our material, abandoning the pristine state. What is the key factor to predict damage? This is, in my opinion, very important. Because on one side, you have the damage at a micro-mechanical level, particularly in our material, also in metals. But what we use are models that take our problem at macro-mechanical model, so a homogenized version of our actual material. So we should be able to find a connection in between our micro-mechanical failure, or damage, and the variable at macro-mechanical level that apparently control this appearance of damage. This is quite clear when we talk about, for instance, plasticity in metals. Plasticity in metals is represented here and is due to the appearance of movement, relative movement, at the or in presence of dislocations. The accepted, well-known Fomis' criterion predicted this appearance of sliding in between parts of the material when the modulus of the deviatory part of the stresses reaches a certain value. This is correct, but this is not physically based. This appeared simply when Fomices tried to apply plasticity theory in complicated problems. And he observed that an hexagon was a Tresca criterion was a very complicated shape. And a circle was similar, and there would be almost no difference. What probably at the beginning he was not conscious is that the correct criterion was Fomices, but formulated by Henke. Because it's the same. Both produce the same, but Henke is physically based. Because we have something at micromechanical level, the dislocation, and we have the correct variable at macromechanical level, the energy associated with the distortion or the deviatory part of the stress state. This is fantastic, this correlation. But in composite, this is much more complicated, as we will see. Now, the tool, since I decided 20 years ago to start to understand the mechanism of damage, was to use micromechanical studies. I'm going to refer to three of them. So the first corresponds to the failure under tension. This is what you know perfectly and has been shown several times. This is when we go to the direct appearance of the damage, what we observe. And the predictions, in our case, we use boundary elements to predict the structure of the internal damage was this one, in two fibers that presented the same alignment. What we observe is that, for instance, here where you have two fibers in a similar position, is a almost mimetic correspondence in between predictions and what we observe. Obviously, if we have more complicated structure, what we see corresponds to what we have found numerically, although adapting to the situation of the fibers. This is tension. Under compression, the first thing that attracted me was the presence of a 53 degrees in the appearance of the failure. Okay, this angle represented here, would be 53, more or less. Why? Is there an explanation for this? We found this at micromechanical level. The reason was that we first stated that the damage would appear at this position, that would propagate in this way, stopping here because a mode 2 appeared, and then the angle at which this damage abandoned the interface interfiber matrix was 53. So this helped us to have confidence in that the macromechanical studies were able to reproduce what we have seen at macromechanical level. And here you have, for this case, so you have a configuration similar to what we have predicted at the angle of abandoning of this is 53 degrees. Now, the third example is the role of a stress parallel to the plane of failure, always interfiber failure. So if you have a configuration like this dominated by the stress sigma 2-2, then in most of the failure criteria, sigma 3-3 does not appear. So if sigma 2-2 acts, we expect to have a plane of failure like this. But if this is the plane of failure, the bonding crack in between fiber in matrix is not aligned with the plane of failure. So mode 2 would have something to say about this. And this is exactly what we tried to, with a micromechanical model, also use boundary element, we tried to show. And here you have the evolution of G in the debonding crack in the absence of sigma 3 and in presence of sigma 3 when sigma 3 is compression. So if you release more energy, you will have sooner the appearance of damage. And this is what we check here. So here you have the compression, the lateral compression applied when there is no compression applied. You have the failure at the expected value of controlled by YT. When you apply lateral compression, you have clearly an effect of the implication of sigma 3.3. The scatter is enormous, but it's something associated with testing perpendicular to the fiber and also due to the homemade device we performed at that moment to check our ideas. So the presence of a lateral compression indicates that the value of the loading of deformation of producing the failure is being altered. And this was published in this paper. So now I'm going to introduce just the type of thin plies we have used in our study. You have here this corresponding to Triple H composites. Also we have used this corresponding to North thin ply. You will check immediately that the transverse shape of this fiber is especially clearly non-circular. When you move to the same material, when you move to thickness of 50 gram square, no problem. I don't know if it has any implication, but qualitatively speaking, it does not have any implication. So, the first thing we studied was at micromechanical level with a multi-scale model. We have here one laminate, which is 0, 90, and symmetric, okay? And we studied the behavior of a debonding crack in between the fiber and the matrix. So this is micromechanics, this is mesomechanics, and this is mesomechanics. The result was, the first time I saw it, I thought, has to be wrong. Because you see here that in this table you have different thicknesses, okay? In blue, you have G, in red, you have G2, and in red, you have G1, and in green, you have G2, okay? And there was no difference in between G. There was no difference. And obviously, I thought that I would capture the scale effect with this first study. But there was no effect of this. What does it mean? It means that in accordance with our numerical analysis, if we trust on the numerical analysis, there is the same probability of getting one isolated debonding in a very thin lamina of the laminate or in a very thick one. But this is not what we were observing till that moment. We revised the calculation many times. When we were convinced that everything was okay, we expressed our ideas at that moment in the following way. So if I have a thick laminate means that 90 degrees thick, and a thin laminate, which means that 90 degrees is very thin, you have same probability of getting one isolated debonding, but it does not imply the same possibility of observing them. At that moment, we had never observed in any type of laminate one isolated debonding. And this is what I'm manifesting here. Obviously, we had not used thin laminas at that period of time. With this in mind, I would like to show you something about the title of my presentation was incidence of the mechanism of damage in the failure of a damage of a laminate. And to explain what I want to say, I'm going to show you one debonding crack in between the fiber and the matrix in our multi-scale model. Here you have two possibilities on the right-hand side, two possibilities of producing the debonding. One is something we have called explosive mechanism. Everything appears at the same time. You can calculate, at least you can calculate this in this way. Or you have a progressive mechanism, which is indicated here by the progression of a damage from the most exposed point to the end where the debonding crack stops. Applying linear elastic fracture mechanics, you start from the same position, you go to the final position, G must be the same. Yes, but not G1 and G2, as is clearly identified here. When you perform your calculations in this way, you have basically mode 1. When you go step by step, you know, moving along the path you are going to have for the final debonding, you have mode 1 and increasing participation of mode 2. So it is not the same. And the practical, it is clearly, sorry, it is you can clearly observe it here for three values of the debonding. Okay, the total value of G is the same, but not the counterpart of mode 1 and mode 2. So what is important here? It is important here that a micro-mechanical analysis using, for instance, finite element, boundary element, and a cohesive approach as an example may condition the values you predict with your numerical model, because it may not represent what is happening in your composite. With all this in mind, I think we are able to understand our interpretation of the scale effect with the participation of ultra-thin plies. Okay, this is what we know. We know that if we represent epsilon, the deformation applied, and here the thickness, you have an interval due to the scatter I have mentioned. There is an interval of epsilon where something happened associated with the value of YT, which is the nominal strength of the lamina under tension. So, independently, in accordance with our predictions, independently of the thickness, you may have one debonding here, or here, or here, or here, or here. Okay? I have put one interval, one you see a square, a parallelogram, that represent the scatter. And independently, our prediction says that independently of this, they disappear. Now, what Parvici et al., most of us, we have done is to use a fracture mechanics approach. And here you have, based on linear fracture mechanics, the evolution of epsilon with the thickness. Okay? Now, let's try to understand what happened taking one very thick lamina and one very thin lamina. If we take one thick lamina, represented here by I, here, we are here, and we start to apply loading, we will reach this curve. What happened? Nothing. Nothing. The debonding cannot appear, but needs to reach epsilon yt. And the curve is indicating me that if there were one crack, there would be energy to produce the breakage. But we are in the pristine state, so there are no cracks. We can increase the loading. Yes. What happened here? Nothing. Nothing. Here, something appeared. Because we have reached the area where one debonding appeared. What happened? Now we have energy enough for producing the extension of the crack. In this case, the first debonding. And what happened? That we have a complete transverse crack. Just a transverse crack? Clearly not. Why not? Because this excess of energy from J to K has to manifest in some way. And the way is the appearance of delamination. We had energy enough to produce the transverse crack at point A, and then, at point J, and then the rest has to be used for delamination. If we move to the other side, one very thin lamina. In a very thin lamina, the first thing we reach is this point. And at this point, one debonding appears in accordance with our modeling, if we trust on them. And it's true. It's true. Here you have. It is difficult to get the first, because by noise, you know, the damage in the thick lamina is very easy to detect. The lamina in the very thin case is more complicated. In this case, we have three, four non-connected debondings. If we now increase, we will have more damage But still, we are under the fracture mechanic curve. So we don't have transverse cracking. We have more damage. You can check. By the way, RF is not radius of the fiber. It's reference fiber. So you can compare what you have here near the reference fiber and what you have here near the reference fiber. More damage has appeared. But again, isolated debondings. What happens if we increase this? If we increase this, we will arrive to the deformation associated with XT. So we may have, using ultra-thin plies, we may have the failure of the laminate by means of the failure of the 0 degrees lamina without having transverse crack and without having extra damage associated with the presence of transverse crack, delamination cracks. Details of the calculation and so on, you can find in this paper, published in 2021. Obviously, the first thing we need to be sure is that when you use thin plies, everything happens as our prediction, our calculation predicted, which is that the first damage must appear at the same level of the deformation. This, with regular thicknesses, cannot be proved. But with ultra-thin plies, can be proved. Here you have. So the first damage appear basically at the same level. This is quite high for this particular material. And what is different is the pattern of the damage that appear. In the case of the thickest lamina of these four, In the case of the thickest, you have here, you have the bonding, but almost a transverse crack. In the case of this, you have just isolated the bonding, nothing else. So what predicted by the model seems to be corresponded by the observations. Now, what to do with all this? I mean, how we can use this? I'm going to show you some things we are doing in the last 2 or 3 years using this increase, in our opinion, of knowledge of the actual mechanism of damage. We have verification, the pattern found, as I have shown you, and I would like to say something about the concept of in-situ strength. I was always attracted by the use of this concept. Is correct this concept or not? Now, it depends on what you want to represent by in-situ strength. If strength for us is the abandoning of the pristine state, we don't have in-situ strength. We don't have. Damage starts abandoning the pristine state. The matter is that when it's very thin, isolated debondings in a 90-degree ply, as a designer of composite, I don't care. In a very thick lamina of 90 degrees, then the appearance of the first damage involves damage in the interfaces with near laminas. And this concerns me a lot, if the component is going to be subjected later on to bending or shear or whatever. So it is a matter of agree what do we want to understand by strength. Now, the optimization of the 90 degrees lamina. I work with aeronautical companies, and they are obsessed with increasing the thickness of the lamina. Not because mechanical or structural reasons, no, because it's cheaper. That's all. But there is a limit. And with this knowledge we have now, we can optimize the thickness. The optimization of the thickness simply required to understand the behavior, and we have performed one calculation for this material, and north implied material, with three different stacking sequences, but involving the same number of individual plies. The only difference is that in the green case, we have four laminas of 90, here two, and here one, okay? And we performed the same study, So start of the damage. In this case, we have this interval. We have this interval of loading, and these are the three different configurations. By the way, here you have only one debonding, only one debonding. Now we increase the loading, and we are getting the evolution of this. And we found that the three cases we had analyzed were in this three position of the thickness. So it is clear what would be the optimum thickness of the 90 degrees. That one. Why? Because it produces the appearance of a transverse crack at the same time that the 0 degree ply fail. For them, they say it is a complication to put thickness of different values, but I think that is something that can be solved easily. One or two more details before the conclusions. We are using these ideas to characterize a material. For instance, to calculate G1C of 0 degree, one possibility is to make this analysis, which is simply energy balance between the initial and the final situation. Another possibility is to say, okay, I'm going to take different values of G1C. I'm going with these values, in this case with gamma, which is one half of GC. We are going to make a comparison in between the predictions and the observations. And we did it. These are the five observations for N equal 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. And then clearly, this was by far, this was by far the more coherent value of gamma in accordance with the observation. And it's 50 and G1C was 100. Incredible, but this is what we obtained. Just something to mention that we are now working, knowing this, in the calculation of properties in the interface between laminas. These are the images. And we are considering effect of different patterns that you obtain to see how they affect the behavior and the bending, shear, compression, fatigue. Also, behavior of composite under biaxial or under fatigue load can be now started with a different view of the mechanism of damage. So let's put all the conclusions I have, and let me concentrate in a couple of them. One thing is that based on the Parvici results, there are many opportunities to assign or to give an explanation. And one of them is that you need a value of the stress and a value of the energy. I have papers published with this. I don't think this is correct. Once I have understood the mechanism of damage, there are two possibilities of generating them. And each of them is controlled by energy. Energy controls everything. What happens is that one of them has one clear value of the stress associated with the mechanism. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to use stress. Yeah, this is correct. This is what we are doing. But it does not imply that you need to have a certain pattern of damage, both values, energy and stress. Everything is controlled by energy. And the fourth and the last, I'm concerned about the capacity. We have capacity now for modeling everything, using phase field, cohesive element, many possibilities. Be sure that your tool is reproducing the actual mechanism of failure. Because if not, you can get results that do not reproduce what you have in reality. Thank you very much for your attention. Sorry for extending my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Federico. Are there any questions from the audience? Yes, I see a couple.
Many thanks for the nice presentation. So concerning your model, you presented everything in 2D. And regarding the experimental observation, you show us surface observation. And it's clear that at the surface, you have a singularity. So basically, stress goes up to infinity if you do an elastic model. So my question is, if you considered 3D model instead of 2D, so probably you would have different quantitative use of parameter because of the singularity. Do you expect to have same qualitative conclusion?
It's a very adequate question, because in the last 10 years we have had doubts about what you have are presented. Okay, it is true. Everything is based on what we observe in the surfaces and based in a model that in the surface what you have is a plane stress, not plane strain, not generalized plane stress. You have plane stress, something that we engineer, we typically don't use because it's a very complicated problem. Now, we have performed with glass experiments to see if what we see here corresponds with what we see here and how the damage progresses. In glass, it is reasonably easy to do it. In carbon, we cannot do it. We cannot do it. But in carbon, we have compared where in this side the crack appear and where the crack appear. If this crack appear here or here, you may have something complicated. But there is a tremendous correlation in between what you observe in both cases, which means, in our opinion, that to assume that the 3D case corresponds to what you have on the side, that's okay. With reference to the singularities, I will refer you to Professor Barroso, who is studying now singularities that give origin to some particular damage not referenced here, like crack before to test, like crack parallel to the loading direction. We are now loading here and checking this. And we have observed in some of the experiments with ultra-thin ply that even before to start to apply the loading, we had damage originated by the singularity of the stress state in the edge of the laminate. This is true.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much for your presentation. So you have clearly explained that from a qualitative point of view, you can explain when we have a crack and multiple decohesion, and from a quantitative point of view that you are able to predict when it will appear. My question is about the length of the crack. You have shown us that for thick plies, the crack propagates through the entire thickness of the ply, and for thin plies, you have just a part of it. And I'm wondering if the length of the cracks can be reproduced by your model, and which material quantity is associated with? Probably the fracture toughness, but have you tried to perform that?
You are talking about the length of the delamination crack or the length of the transverse crack?
The transverse crack, the length in that direction.
Yeah. We don't have a model to do this. Okay. We are concentrated on understanding the mechanism of damage. And in fact, we think that once you understand the mechanism of damage, you can now update your mind to see how you can calculate things. For instance, the debonding, the value of the toughness in between fiber and matrix can now be calculated easily because appear at the same value of the deformation. It doesn't matter that it is a thin or a thick lamina. Yeah, with a simple calculation, you can calculate this. Or the delamination that follows in case of thick 90 degrees lamina that follow the appearance of a traverse crack can be observed. And now, from this, you can get the values of the toughnesses, G1C and G2C, of the delamination, of the interfaces, nominal interfaces, between 0 and 90 degrees.
Let's take a video again.